Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Friday afternoon, December 6th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. You may want to think about the gift of investing as you do your holiday shopping. We'll learn more about that in our next segment. But right now, the Labor Department jobs report for November is today's headliner. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. Payrolls increasing 227,000 in the month of November. That's more than expected. The unemployment rate at 4.2%. Overall, a solid number. And also, Diane, not exactly surprising either, because the analysis leading into this report was that the October report was anomalous because of a strike and two hurricanes affecting the numbers. So it seems like the jobs market, new job growth, rebounded rather nicely.
It did rebound nicely, and that was the good news. Also, the three-month moving average picked up a bit on job gains. We're still seeing 70% of all job gains from three main sectors: healthcare and social services, leisure and hospitality, and state and local government hiring, and that's important. The strength in the service sector and what we've seen in terms of tourism, it was another record Thanksgiving. Cruise lines have really come back, and I've been to O'Hare myself recently at 7 a.m. in the morning in the middle of the week, and it was like Thanksgiving, and it wasn't Thanksgiving. That was just this week. So it was really amazing, and I think that is important because service sector is where inflation has been the stickiest. That is where we're seeing demand shift to, and that also we're seeing consumers wanting to buy big-ticket items that they're worried will go up in price as a result of tariffs in the consumer sentiment report. So even though the bond market has sort of decided, oh, this is good enough for the Fed, we still got another inflation report next week for the Fed. And there's that issue of the idea of consumers buying ahead of our increase in tariffs is its own self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of buoying inflation as well.
Now, Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell had said one of the reasons why they had that half point rate cut to start off the tapering cycle back in September was they wanted to get ahead of weakness in the job market. And even though this employment report is very solid, good job growth, the unemployment rate ticking up to 4.2%, and that the list of the people who were holding part-time jobs for economic reasons was at 7.8%. Both of those figures, a slight increase from the month before. And is that the weakness in the labor market potentially that the Fed is trying to head off?
Well, there is some cracks in the labor market. It's not any weaker than, in fact, the labor market looked much weaker going into that September report than it does today. And so I think that's important to keep in mind as well. It is the reason why the bond market's excited about the idea that we might see a rate cut. Again, we also have conflicting data. We have the consumer confidence numbers picked up in November because people felt better about job prospects, especially as a 35 and under crowd. And we did see in the Beige Book that wage gains for entry-level workers were moving back up again. And I think those are things the Fed's going to be watching and weighing against this. Is the labor market cooling off more? Is that going to give us a drag on inflation? Or are there other factors that could keep inflation stickier and plateauing in the recent range we've seen, really 2.5% to 2.8% on core since May?
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, giving the gift of investing this holiday season.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
As you try to come up with gifts for relatives, you may want to think about giving something with a longer-term reward. We welcome in Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And it's not shiny. It doesn't necessarily make noise, and it may not look good in your driveway, but there's no gift quite like an appreciating asset.
I absolutely agree. You know, whether you're a parent or a grandparent, there's some pretty cool ways to really gift significant amounts of money. So let's talk about a few. College is often on the minds of parents and grandparents, so why not fund a 529 plan? You can contribute up to $18,000 per year, or if you're married, you can gift up to $36,000 to one single beneficiary without triggering a federal gift tax. You can even front load up to 5 years and contribute up to $90,000 or $180,000 if you're married. So that's one thing to think about, because most of us tend to think sending our kids to college is a good idea. There's another way to gift $18,000 or $36,000 a year, and that's by the gift of life insurance. You know, we're all going to die, Rob.
No.
So why not? Why not think about buying a life insurance policy on your own life to leverage up what you can eventually leave to someone else? Of course, when you think about life insurance, you also have to consider underwriting because you have to physically, medically qualify for that. But for a fraction of the eventual gift, you could leave an impactful gift, maybe even a meaningful legacy. So something to consider.
And then also, not to get too far in the weeds on life insurance policies, but I'm recalling many conversations I've had with my own life insurance person, where a life insurance policy could actually be an investment vehicle that over the course of time that it gains value if you own it, and if you put it on the child's life, by the time they turn 18, they're still alive, but you know it turns into a pretty nice chunk of change.
You know, and that's fine, especially if you want to protect their insurability. But I'm talking about leaving legacy money. So you're better off putting that gift on yourself and then naming them as the beneficiary. Or you can even name them the owner and make it a gifting strategy that you do every single year. It makes for large leverage happen. But you're right, you can buy insurance policies that offer some investment potential, either on a risk basis, like variable life, or they have those fixed indexed life insurance policies where you're just linking to the market. You're not really in the market, so there's no risk.
And then what about opening up a custodial account in the name of the person who's getting the gift? Because not only are you potentially giving them the gift of an appreciating asset in the form of stock, but then you could also teach them how to invest over the course of time, especially if you're younger, Chris. I think this is probably a very valuable lesson to pass along, because if you're not teaching somebody about how investing works and you're just absorbing lessons through social media, investing in the stock market or trading in the wrong hands, it just sounds like sports gambling.
You know, and I get it, but let me just address the custodial thing first. A lot of people like custodial accounts, not my favorite way to go. especially if the child or grandchild has some income that they've generated. I'd much prefer you fund a Roth IRA before a custodial account. Why? Well, number one, the money inside of a Roth IRA grows tax-free. Ding, ding, ding. Number two, better creditor protection. You know, that grandbaby or kid gets into an accident, there goes the custodial account. Not so with the Roth IRA. And right now, you can gift up, you can fund a Roth IRA up to $7,000 for those that are under 50 years old. Why not consider saying to your child or grandchild, hey, I'll put in 50% if you put in the other 50%. Now you're teaching them about giving and investing at the same time. And for the kid or the grandkid, that's 100% return before even market returns happen.
Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president, Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, the shocking murder of the United Healthcare CEO in New York triggers social media rage directed at insurers.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
This week's murder of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson in New York has unleashed social media rage aimed at health insurance companies. Let's discuss the reaction with Maya Goldman, healthcare reporter with Axios based in New York. Maya, thank you for joining us today. And ever since this tragic incident unfolded earlier this week on the streets of Midtown Manhattan, where Brian Thompson was gunned down on the way to an investor meeting, it has led to some rhetoric on social media, on X, on Blue Sky, on Threads, here there and everywhere. That's pretty edgy and could reflect poorly on the person posting that. So what have you been seeing this week?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. It's great to be here. It's definitely, there has been an outpouring of rage on social media directed at health insurance companies and at Thompson himself. And it's, I mean, everything from kind of like joking sort of sentiment about like, oh, I thoughts and prayers are out of network, to some more earnest comments that are, you know, I quote one in the article that I wrote about this that says, when you shoot one man on the street, it's murder. When you kill thousands of people in hospitals by taking away their ability to get treatment, you're an entrepreneur. So I think overall, it just really highlights how fed up people are with the health insurance system and how personal this is to everybody.
Now, at the same time, though, this may come off to the user as poignant social commentary. To others, it may come off as celebrating a man being gunned down in cold blood in the middle of a city street. And if your name is attached to that, how would your employer or a potential employer view that particular social media post?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I don't have an answer to that necessarily. I'm sure it's on a case-by-case basis, but I mean, we see this all the time. I talked to one person in the insurance industry who wanted to remain anonymous because it's a very sensitive issue, but they pointed out that people choosing to say and do unkind things on the internet, hiding behind their keyboards, that's not new, that's not unique to the health insurance industry. But yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, prudent online content is something to be watchful for in a professional world.
And from a public relations standpoint, the insurers or the insurance industry as a whole, I'm imagining they're watching all of this unfold, and there must be a communications plan in the works to address some of these issues, because above and beyond the snarky commentary, there are some pretty emotional stories being shared about denial of coverage and outcomes that in some cases may have led to friends or loved ones passing away. I mean, how does the insurance industry try to change their image if their image is affected by this?
Yeah, I think that's the huge next question that I will be watching for closely. It's certainly going to be a big task, and I don't know necessarily how they do that. But one thing that surprised me when I was researching people's sentiment about insurance the other day to write about this was that people actually do rate their own insurance coverage relatively highly. It's more the insurance industry in general that people distrust when it comes to public opinion surveys. And I talked to one expert who said, you know, that might be because people just feel lucky to have coverage in general. So it's definitely a curious trend there.
Yeah, it's very similar to that, all those surveys about public approval of Congress, where
exactly.
People like their own member of Congress, but as a whole, they don't like those clowns in Congress, and they think they're just a bunch of clowns.
Right. And I think one other important thing to mention, which I forgot to say right off the bat, is that we do not know the motive for the murder of Brian Thompson yet. That has not been discovered or announced. So it's important to, you know, this rage is very real, but it's important not to draw conclusions before we know them.
Maya Goldman, healthcare reporter, Axios in New York. Thank you for joining us today.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The city of Chicago takes down a homeless encampment in a West Side park. A law that could lead to a ban on TikTok in the U.S. clears an appeals court. An entrepreneur Friday ascending from the role of kitchen prep cook to CEO of a fast casual restaurant chain. And as the year nears its end, you may be looking for a better job in 2025. Business, the markets are mixed right now. The Dow is down 89 points, NASDAQ up 142, S&P 500 up 14, 28 degrees right now under partly sunny skies. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, workers from the city of Chicago are using construction equipment to clear out a homeless camp in Humboldt Park on the west side. The dismantling of the site began around 9 o'clock this morning. The action comes despite calls from advocates for the people living there to keep it open, saying it breaks up a community that's developed there. A federal appeals court has upheld a law that could lead to a ban on TikTok in the U.S. a few months from now. This is CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
The United States government's position to TikTok's parent corporation is this: just sell TikTok to an American company. But the Chinese government will not allow that, nor will it allow changing TikTok's algorithm. That told the judges something right there. Even if banning TikTok in the United States would result in a lot of unhappy Americans, the national security risk is simply too great.
TikTok parent company ByteDance argues the law violates the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed right now. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ryan Dietrich, chief market strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. And there's nothing the markets like more than not being surprised. And it seems like the jobs report for the month of November squarely falls into the not surprising category. Everybody was anticipating a bounce back, understanding that October was weighed down by a couple of factors, you know, the Boeing strike and the storms that hit Florida and the Carolinas, and that there would be a rebound. The rebound is here. And how were markets interpreting that November jobs report?
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Rob, and TGIF, everybody out there. So, you know, expected, like you said, October is only 12,000 jobs created, the lowest we've seen in this cycle. That was revised up to 36,000. That's still really low. Came in at 227,000 jobs last month, which is a really, really solid number, especially off of the low number the month before. But it wasn't all that much higher. It was expected to be around 210, right? So like you said, it just kind of was right down the middle. The three-month average is actually 176,000. That's the highest we've seen on a three-month average since about 6 months ago. So that's a pretty good thing. But what's the market? Okay, so the economy's good. The labor market's still fairly solid. I think that's what we're going to say here. Unemployment rate did tick up to 4.2% from 4.1%. That's something we're watching closely. Still, historically, that's awfully, awfully low. What's the market saying, though, right? I mean, listen, the Fed has a likely interest rate cut coming up in 2 weeks. The odds of that cut at the start of the day were about 70%. At the time we're doing this, it's about 90%. So the market, like you said, didn't get a curveball. We expect to see another Fed cut this December in a couple of weeks. Overall, employment backdrop still pretty darn solid.
Now, when it comes to the predictions of a Fed rate cut, there are two. There's the prediction markets, there's the smart money, there is analysis from experienced Fed watchers, and then, of course, the Fed itself gets its message out through its preferred organs, mostly in the Wall Street Journal. So when we're talking about the distinct possibility of an interest rate cut at the next policy meeting, has this already been telegraphed, or is this informed yet wishful thinking?
I think it's been telegraphed. Powell has opened his mouth a lot lately. I think it's likely going to be there. You do have, what's so crazy about the Fed, different members speak and it's out there. And, you know, Waller a couple days ago said he thought there'd be likely a cut, and Bostic maybe said something differently. But at the end of the day, Jerome Powell's the one driving the bus. Again, that's a great point. There's different ways to look at it. I was talking about the Fed funds futures. I don't get too geeky with this, but it's what the futures market are betting on is 90% chance. So, historically they have cut in December. I mean, a lot of times they maybe only one or two cuts a year, and it's like right at the end of the year. I don't know if that's random or trying to get a cut in before the end of the year. So I think it still makes sense. The big question, though, on everyone's mind is how many cuts do we see next year? Right, the market right now is saying maybe only two more cuts. So that's something to be aware of. We think there could be a couple more as inflation continues to improve, but that's something that's more of a 2025 story, but likely one cut still coming up in a couple weeks.
And then just looking at the rest of the year, will the markets just follow this familiar pattern going through December 31st? Mm-hmm. Of course, pending any sudden events here or there or anywhere else in the world, a steady march upward based on optimism about the economy in 2025, mm-hmm. and that there may be a lighter regulatory touch from the Trump administration, and also the possible extension of the 2017 tax cut bill.
Yeah, well, let's hope so, right? I think we'll take that. I mean, listen, this has been one of the best years we've ever seen, but specifically, it is literally like the best election year ever up to this point of the year, with the stock market up well over 25% for the year. But just some things for listeners to think about. December is historically the most likely month to be higher, up like 74% of the time. In an election year, going back 40 years, December's been higher 9 of the last 10 times. When you're up 20% for the year, like we were this year, going into the last month of the year, you tend to get a chase higher 9 out of 10 times. Only once in history has December been the worst month of the year. That's the lowest out of any of the 12 months. That was in 2018 when we had, yes, a Fed potential policy mistake. They didn't cut. The market threw a fit. Pretty big sell-off. So all in all, seasonality is something we wouldn't ignore here, but you put the bow on it nicely. There's a lot of still positives. This economy is still strong. The Fed is still dovish. Inflation is still last year's problem. Productivity's high. Earnings are strong. If there's any worry, it's maybe, hey, a lot of people are catching on. 2 years ago, who was saying this, right? We were bullish 2 years ago. Nobody was bullish 2 years ago, it felt like. So now a lot of people notice that things are good, and the market tends to price these things in. But at least for the rest of this year, I think, Rob, we still might get a little bit of upward bias, which will kick off which will end a really nice year for investors.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Entrepreneur Friday, and this afternoon we're taking a journey on the path to success in the notoriously tough restaurant industry. We welcome in Chris Artinian, President and COO of Bibibop Asian Grill in Chicago. Chris, thank you for joining us today. I mean, Bibibop is your latest endeavor, but you got your start 25 years old as a line cook at Morton's, the steakhouse. And what was that? How'd you get into that in the first place?
Well, everything has a story, but briefly, I took a long shot and wrote a letter to the CEO, Alan Bernstein, looking for a training program. And he was generous enough to reach out to me and got me started as a line cook at the location in New York City.
And you worked your way up through the ranks to eventually become the CEO of Morton's. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, that is correct. It's truly the American dream. I'm humbled and honored by the many people that surrounded me to get me to that point.
And when you start as a line cook at a restaurant, especially at a place like Morton's, which has a clientele that wants the best when they go to a Morton's steakhouse, how did that inform your journey through the corporate ranks? Because you started as a line cook, you were in the kitchen, you knew how the meals came together.
In terms of you know, forming my career and forming my sort of view, it's not only did I start in fine dining, where certainly all the details and the quality of food is so important. But what I also learned in that journey is that how it really translates to any time you serve people in hospitality. It's all about those details and the experience in serving high quality food, but driving a tremendous experience that makes it memorable. And that's really what helped shape my framework for this industry and my growth and communicating through people, not only the team of the people that we have that serve our guests, but the guests that come through the door.
And then what led you to BB Bop, which of course has a number of locations now? This is Asian food. I'm guessing a great deal of Korean inspiration. What took you from the steakhouse to BB Bop?
Well, you know, the journey here really, because of the principles of BB Bop, it was certainly on brand. I mean, certainly on trend. It's a build your own Asian concept, really health forward with delicious food. So, and it was growing at a great pace and was exciting for me to get involved and help Charlie Shin, our founder, who really founded this based on, strengthening our neighbor and serving great food that nourishes people in a delicious way and in a healthful way. And today, clean eating and eating better for you no longer has to sacrifice delicious food. And Charlie really married those. And I was a customer before I joined and just excited to help lead it and grow it.
And also just in this particular space and fast casual, I think, no disrespect to places that serve burgers and fries, but there's a point at which you don't want another hamburger or bag of French fries. You want to try something else. And it seems like, you know, outside of just the health conscious portion of what the menu has to offer, it's just variety.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think today's, you know, everyone's looking for what's new. With the onset of the Food Network over the last 10, 15 years, everyone gets inspired by things that they may have never tried before and or are open to trying more things. And BB Bop really provides a variety of things in a build-your-own concept, and anything ranging from our delicious marinated chicken, our spicy chicken, our Korean beef, to our delicious yum-yum sauce. And you can make it as indulgent as you want, and you could also make it, you know, as healthy as you want, which is just a great balance while still serving your body a great meal full of nutrients and deliciousness.
Chris Artinian, President and CEO of BB Bop Asian Grill in Chicago and elsewhere in the country. Thank you for joining us on this Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, top job prospects for the coming year.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
If your list of New Year's resolutions will include a new job, you should be in the prep stage right now. Let's get some insight from Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, J.W. Michaels & Company in Chicago. Jason, thank you for joining us today. And if you want to time your job search, have we already passed the time at which most businesses have set their budgets for next year and know how many people they will be adding to the payrolls next year and already making preparations to do so?
So it's a great question. Generally, there's not many newly created jobs from, let's say, Thanksgiving to Christmas. Really, the major push for getting a new job starts sort of the middle of January. So right now is a good time to start getting your resume prepared, start doing a little bit of networking, checking the job boards. But the job search really kicks off in earnest probably the second or third week in January to have the first major push of the year for hiring.
And when it comes to conducting that job search, I think you and I have done a couple of segments talking about LinkedIn horror stories of the people who say they've applied to hundreds of online job listings and never got a call for an interview, and they were screened out by the AI. And is that a waste of time once you get to a certain level in your career that really it's all networking now?
You know, it's a great question. It depends. I would say, listen, we still occasionally for some of our most senior jobs that we work with in Chicago, we can get a resume occasionally from like a monster. So it's always good to use every resource imaginable. The more senior you get, it's really obviously better through your own network. But clearly, LinkedIn, Indeed, Monster, CareerBuilder, it is still a good way to supplement your networking internally.
And then also, I mean, it just gives you a good idea of what's out there. And I would imagine at the same time, if you see something you like, you could use LinkedIn to do a little bit of detective work and find the hiring manager, or maybe find a friend of a friend who works there and see if they can do some sniffing around for you.
Yes, with modern technology and all the information that's out there in the public domain, if there's a job that you are interested in and you go through LinkedIn, it has a thing where you can share your mutual connections. So there's definitely a way to go around the back door to say, okay, can you help me with this? Or I know Mary, to sort of give you a leg up against other people who might be looking for similar jobs.
I always give this advice to college graduates who are coming out. And of course, I use a reference that's totally lost on them. I say you're like Detective Columbo from the TV series. You're trying to solve a mystery, and you're pulling at all of the leads that will eventually lead you to, in the case of Columbo, the bad guy, in your case, finding a job. And that requires a lot of shoe leather work in addition to just spending a lot of time online.
Yes. Getting a new job is a full-time job. Applying online is one part, but as you said, you have to be a good detective. You got to see what connections you have. You got to do your research, and you got to sort of quote-unquote pound the pavement. So getting your application into a job is great, but there's a tremendous amount of work to do to get it across the finish line, and you really got to view looking for a job as almost like a second job as well.
Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, J.W. Michaels & Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.